Adam left.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Well, I think I might take issue with that. The best part of waking up is turning on the radio to 107.1 FM, or, of course, we broadcast online, WWGH1071.com, and listening to the great shows we have here on The Talking Place. Adam Lepp here. Hope you enjoyed the previous hour, the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, where we got geeky and talked today's top technology topics, little tickling and tingling for the old brain cells. This hour is a little bit different. It's mid-morning coffee break with Adam, discussing anything and everything. Dr. Ronald Feynman will join me shortly, but first, please stand or kneel or do what you wish to do for our national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming.
That was simply beautiful. Our national anthem, a hard song to sing, and I certainly admire anybody who can perform that tune. Obviously, such a person has better vocal range than myself. I got more of a talking voice, so let's talk today's important issues and politics and anything else that might be on the table. Our resident political expert, presidential historian, and all-around fine gentleman, Dr. Ronald Feynman, on the phone with me. Ron, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Adam. Doing fine, and very happy to be on your show for the 19th time. On the station for the 19th time, that is. 13th time with you.
Now, 19, Ron, as you probably know, and there was a song by Paul Hardcastle back in the mid-80s called 19. That was the average age of people that went to war, that were drafted, I believe, for the Vietnam War. I'm sure you're
correct, yes. And that Vietnam War series was just recently on PBS. It was very revealing for people who were not old enough to remember it.
And you remember that song, 19, by Paul Hardcastle back in the mid-80s, where that's what it was about. And a lot of people didn't realize it till they listened to the lyrics. And, you know, current songs, you don't really understand the lyrics, or they don't really make a lot of sense. But that song had a lot of political interest. And it was kind of sad, as 19, I mean, goodness sakes, you're barely out of high school. And
you know, a lot of music in the 60s was very political because of the Vietnam War.
Definitely, and I think it brought home a good point, but I was just thinking about that as number 19. Of course, there was also a breakfast cereal called Product 19.
Yes, that's true.
There my brain goes wavering once again. Ron, there are several topics on the table today, many things going
on. Several? How about many?
We lost another musical industry genius yesterday, Tom Petty. Very sad. Again, only 66 and a half years old, and honestly, not really much older than I am. A brilliant guitarist, singer. He sang with Traveling Wilburys, a super group with ELO's Jeff Lynne, and the legendary Bob Dylan, the late George Harrison, much more. Very unexpected. I did not. He had a cardiac arrest. They could not revive him. He played in Columbus earlier this year, a very popular concert in town, and really very sad. Someone who I think defined music starting in the 70s and still has an impact on current musicians. First thing I want to talk about, Ron, would be a birthday boy, a gentleman who celebrated a birthday yesterday. Actually, it was Sunday.
October 1st, yes.
In honor of the birthday boy, let's go ahead and play another little audio snippet.
What?
Giant peanut with sea salt.
Dude, you're freaking me out.
Hey, getting really sick of this, Gary.
Planters, now with pure sea salt.
In honor of the birthday boy, if you don't already know, it was President Jimmy Carter who made a small fortune in peanut farming prior to becoming a politician. Ron, as we kind of see it, President Carter, he probably didn't have the most happy presidency, and he certainly governed during a difficult time. But
absolutely, you're correct, yes.
But in retrospect, he was probably a lot better than we thought he was. He was a victim of circumstance, the long lines at the gas station.
I have no doubt about that. I definitely think he was a victim of a lot of circumstance. Of course he had, as everybody does, their shortcomings. But honestly, his time was just very difficult. I am not sure that Gerald Ford, had he won a full term, would have done any better. It was certainly a very difficult time, and he left office very downcast and depressed because he lost big time to Ronald Reagan. But now, with his post-presidency reaching 37 years by next January 20th, longest ever of any president, he has become a great international figure. And, of course, he did win the Nobel Peace Prize, ultimately, for all of his good deeds.
And certainly as a former president, I mean, the guy's in his 90s. He has had some medical issues, but he has help build homes for Habitat for Humanity. He's always thought of as just a regular guy. I mean, a very intelligent president, and you learn about the guy and realize he's quite a genius. He talks about
how... Yes, he is. His IQ is said to be among the highest of any president, if you're going to go by measurements of IQ, assuming they're accurate, yes. Right up there with Jefferson, and right up there with James Madison, and also Bill Clinton is said to have a very high IQ.
And as you probably know, one of my favorite presidential children was his daughter, Amy. You don't hear much about her, but she certainly made a few headlines during the presidency that she went to public school, which was the first time that a presidential child had gone to D.C. public schools in quite a while. And I remember watching that on TV, that the Secret Service accompanying her to school. She's kind of disappeared from the spotlight, but you hear about Jimmy and his wife, Rosalind. They've been married for...
Yeah, Rosalind just turned 90 in August, so that makes four straight presidential couples, Ford, Carter, Reagan, and the first Bush, all of which both of them reached over 90. That's quite an accomplishment in itself.
And they've been married over 70 years, and that's...
Actually married 71 years, the longest presidential marriage, except for George H.W. Bush, 72 years in their case.
So when they got married, Ron, you were a very, very young child.
I was just born.
Exactly. Speaking with
Dr. I was born, I guess, just about a month before the Bushes got married and about a year and a half old when the Carters got married. Yes.
Speaking live from Boca Raton, right? We got the pronunciation right this time. I always thought it was Raton like baton, but it's Raton. Florida, Dr. Ronald Feynman, our resident presidential and American history expert and commentator. He is the author of the blog, which he updates daily, theprogressiveprofessor.com. Also teaching a course or two at a local college. You had class last Friday, Ron. How is the class going?
The class is going well. Unfortunately, we have to cut some of the curriculum because we lost two Fridays, and it can't be made up. The calendar has to end at the regular time. But the classes seem to be going well. One is American government, and the other one is U.S. history since the Civil War, and they're both going well.
As we like to talk about online, Ron, since we got together last week, there have been many major news stories, and unfortunately, they've not really been positive stories. We'll do a quick tribute to, again, the late, great Tom Petty a little later in the show, as well as afternoon when I'm on Now Without Scott Spears, which is what I call that show. But the tragedy in Las Vegas, I guess that was considered to be one of the most tragic, most deadly acts of national terror ever. Any thoughts on that, Ron? There's been a lot of controversy regarding gun laws and again, the shooter
well,
himself.
Well, the point is there was the Brady Bill, which passed after Ronald Reagan was shot, named after the Press Secretary James Brady, who, of course, was disabled for the next 33 years of his life till he died. But in 2004, it was not renewed, and there was no real regulation about guns at all. Even the idea of background checks or indeed preventing any automatic weapons, or now the issue is silencers. The Republicans seem to want to pass a bill to allow silencers, which would make a future attempt like this something where even the victims would not even know, or the people in the crowd would not even know that there was shooting going on, so it would cause even more deaths. I just don't understand why the right wing and the Republican Party and conservatives see such a threat by having some kind of gun regulation. We're not talking about banning guns, we're talking about banning certain kinds of weapons and having background checks and having silencers not allowed. It just seems insane to me that they just do not understand that. But we see Sean Hannity on the attack and Rush Limbaugh and of course, Wayne LaPierre of the NRA, National Rifle Association, and others. And it's really a sick situation when we have such large loss of life and still the opposition Republican Party, the ones that control now, don't want to do anything about it at all.
Now, people are saying that we should blame the NRA, that they are accountable. And that's brought into, I guess, the analogy arena. The tobacco lawsuits are the tobacco companies, Philip Morris, or et cetera, are they liable for people dying or becoming ill due to smoking? I say, well, it's America. No one has to smoke. You're not being forced to, and no one's being forced to buy a gun. But responsible gun ownership and responsible purchasing and background checks, that's very important, and I'd say it's more important than the tobacco issue, because a gun is a very deadly weapon.
Obviously so, because we have the highest violence rate of any civilized country in the world compared to all the others. And yet the feeling is, well, that's just part of the nature of freedom, as Bill O'Reilly said yesterday. Outrageous statement.
Now, what do you think about the people that are saying the NRA is responsible, that they're accountable? What's their part in this responsibility matrix?
Well, the fact is, you got to realize the National Rifle Association has become radicalized. It used to be a reasonable organization. Now it is just an organization to help promote sales and profits of about firearms. And I think Wayne LaPierre does have blood on his hands, really. He certainly does. And he's been very much enriched by being involved with the NRA. And there's no compassion or concern about victims at all. So I think the NRA does have a lot of the blame, but I'm not sure what can be done about it. And, of course, with the Republicans in control right now, nothing will happen. But, again, it did happen back in the time after Reagan was shot. We did get the Brady Bill, and to not even continue that, George W. Bush did not call for its renewal. It was, I think, shameless, really.
We are speaking live with Dr. Ronald Fineman from Boca Raton, Florida. If you'd like to chime in, we are now able to take telephone calls live in the studio. I rigged up a little system, kind of doing a lot of engineering here behind the scenes, but so far I'm batting 1,000, which isn't too bad. You know, in baseball, you bat 300, you're a superstar. I think batting at least at least a 975. If you want to call our special line, which is 937-687-8324, which comes to Yes 687 Tech. Again, 937-687-8324. We can have you join the conversation. You can ask Dr. Fineman a question, provide a comment, complaint, suggestion, what have you. It's an open forum, and we would very much love to hear from you. Ron, I touched on how I see and others see analogies between the NRA responsibility and the tobacco lawsuits. What do you think about that? Is that a logical line of thinking?
Well, the tobacco industry has lost some lawsuits on that. Occasionally, I think there should be the ability to have lawsuits and accountability, but I don't think it's likely to happen in this era that we're living in now. Maybe in the future, but not now, I don't think. Not in the Trump era.
A lot of it, though, would be we need to have better background checks. And
I think
mentioned in Nevada, the laws about getting a firearm are very loose. They're stricter here in Ohio.
Yes, I think Nevada is crazy. In Arizona, I understand it's the same. They go too far. Of course, nobody can say for sure that having gun laws is going to prevent tragedy, but they're contributing to the likelihood of tragedy by their loose regulation or their lack of regulation in Nevada and Arizona.
Now, certainly people have a right to hunt, and they have a right to get a weapon to defend themselves, but you can't just be anybody and walk in like you walk into Walmart and buy a gallon of milk. There have to be background checks and regulations as well as training on safe, responsible gun usage. And I think we need some more universal legislation about that. Any thoughts on your end, Ron? I know we talked about you and I don't hunt. I mean, I certainly enjoy the products of hunting. But again,
as you and I were saying yesterday on Facebook, you would not go out and hunt for your own dinner. You'd rather have somebody prepare it for you.
Right, but the actual act of hunting is not something that we do personally. I do hear somebody calling and want to let the caller know that actually I can't take a call on that number, but if you call me at 937-687-8324, we can put you on the air. So we do have some technical limitations, but still pretty fancy-dancy around the studio. But would you be in favor, Ron, of a national legislation regarding firearms? Is there a way to solve this? Still let people hunt. I don't think we want to outlaw that. And I think you have a right to have, especially if you're, say, managing a convenience store in a not-too-good part of town at 2 or 3 in the morning, I think you have a right to have a weapon.
But absolutely, yes.
Do we need some national legislation? Do we need mandatory training? Is there an easy solution to this?
Well, I do think there should be some kind of mandatory training because you got to realize that in many cases we have unstable people who first of all commit suicide. That's a big problem with having weapons, but also people that are unstable that are going around and having grudges and then taking it out on people, and also children are often becoming victims by accidents because of people not knowing how to store their weapons or keep the ammunition separate. I think we do need national training, and I think we do need background checks. And I think we do need a banning of silencers, things like that. I'm not saying don't allow people to have firearms, but I do think if someone is shown to be mentally unstable, they should not be allowed to have the rights to do that.
Well, that sounds logical to me, and let's hope we can get a resolution, as it's a very tragic situation. A city that's supposed to be happy, where you go and forget your troubles, what you do in Vegas stays in Vegas, so to speak. And again, country music, also one of the great things we have in America, a musical genre,
yes,
that is...
Well, in a way, Las Vegas sounds like the wild, wild west of the 19th century, where there's no limits on violence. A lot of that did happen out in the mountain states, that area. So it does seem to be coming back in that regard by lack of any kind of regulation.
It would seem that way in 2017, that we've graduated from the wild, wild west. And let's hope that we can get a resolution. I'm just speechless. I couldn't believe when I saw that, and I'm still very upset about the situation. Hopefully we can get a resolution and work together. It's not Democrat,
Republican.
Yeah, I got
to say, though, as shocking as that is, what is not shocking these days? Everything. Look at what's going on with the president in Puerto Rico, for instance, and the back and forth on Twitter. It's just unbelievable in my mind when we look at it. It's like, what can really shock us anymore? No matter what happens, that's terrible, it gets worse, it seems, whether it's natural or man-made.
Right. When it comes to these issues, Ron, it doesn't matter if you're Democrat, Republican, male or female, we're Americans and we're on the same team. We need to be more teammates and less people that are conflicted. In some news that just came across my desk literally this morning, the House will vote on legislation that would criminalize abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy, with exceptions for instances where the life of the mother is at risk and in cases involving rape or incest. The Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which is similar to legislation that failed 4 years ago and 2 years ago, has support from the White House this time around. As we've discussed, Ron, there are few more controversial topics than abortion, and I personally have a strong opinion about it. And I think it's an important issue, but would you agree with me that this probably isn't the time to be deciding this? I think we need to concentrate on Puerto Rico, on violence, and many other things that are affecting the world right now.
I think it's a way to just distract from issues that really matter more. I definitely agree with you on that. And I do think we need to concentrate on rebuilding of Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And one way to do it is stop this craziness about a Mexico war, which will never really work out and will not stop or deter people from coming in any case.
Getting back to the birthday boy, President James Earl Carter III, I think that's his full name.
Or Junior.
Okay, Jimmy Carter.
Yeah,
of course.
Junior, yeah.
In addition to being fond of his daughter and his wife and his mom, Miss Lillian.
Who I always thought was the oldest looking person I've ever seen, and she wasn't that old.
More than
and
Barbara Bush?
The South Georgia son that made her have such aged skin.
I would take issue, Ron. I think Barbara Bush and Bernie Sanders have her beat in the department.
Well, first of all, they're older than she was, particularly Barbara Bush. But I'm talking about at the time that she was first lady, I don't think she looked older than Ms. Lillian. But you got a point there.
I guess when George H.W. Bush became president, didn't people say that Barbara Bush looked more like his grandmother? Remember that?
More like his grandma. I think his mother. Yeah, that's true, but because she had white hair. She started to have white hair after the death of their daughter, Robin, of leukemia in 1953, and her hair turned white within 6 months, I've read. So it was in mourning, I guess, or just a reaction to the death of their first daughter, Robin. So she's never dyed her hair, unlike others who do. Like Ronald Reagan dyed his hair, we know that. How could he have had that kind of hair in his 70s? And of course, we know what Donald Trump's trying to do, convince us that he's younger than he is.
Yeah, it's hard to say the deal with Donald Trump's hair. It seems like people paid a little more attention to that when he was running for office, and it's almost become a back burner issue. People don't really care much about his hair, but they do care about Melania's shoes, which I didn't really fully understand, but I think it's just...
Yeah, well, there's so many issues with Trump that the hair is not really a big deal anymore. You're right.
Yeah, just things maybe that have become more important, like how he governs the country, and there's a resignation du jour, pretty much. Every day someone is leaving office or getting fired, or Donald Trump says he's not doing a very good job. We discussed how he has said things about Jeff Sessions that have not really been very complimentary. I mean, neither of us is a fan of Mr. Sessions, but he doesn't have an easy job, and I think the president should be on his side.
No, he doesn't, but look at what happened with his comments in July about HHS Secretary, Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, that if you didn't get the bill through to get rid of Obamacare, you're fired, and even Price laughed. Well, he now either fired or got him to resign because of this expenditure, loose expenditure issue. And meanwhile, there are about five other cabinet members that have the same issue, including Ryan Zinke, the Secretary of Interior. So I think we're going to have quite a few cabinet members forced out. And, of course, to replace them, you've got to get a majority in the U.S. Senate, and it's going to be a real battleground each time they have to replace a cabinet member. Now they have two they have to replace. They have to replace, two of them. So, and probably another few. So everything is, I think, in collapse when you really look at the reality of the Trump presidency.
Adam Lepp here with Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, speaking live from southeastern Florida with Dr. Ronald Fineman about current events, President Trump, and other issues of the day. You are welcome to chime in. We do have technology to allow us to take a telephone call from our listening audience. Don't be shy. Pick up the phone. We don't bite, at least not too hard. 937-687-8324, which comes to yes 687 tech. Your dulcet tones and comments, questions, suggestions, complaints are always welcome. Getting back to, again, the birthday boy, President Carter, and his lovable family. Again, I talk about probably my favorite member of the Carter family, and that would be his brother Billy, who did pass away at a rather young age. He was a gas station owner in Plains, Georgia. Very colorful guy.
The only gas station.
Yeah, rather colorful character, and I think he had a bit of a drinking problem, but you have to kind of laugh it off because he did...
He had a major drinking problem, and he embarrassed the president when he went to Libya and saw Colonel Gaddafi back in 1979. That was not a good moment for the president.
Yeah, that probably wasn't one of Carter's better decisions, and I think it might have affected the election outcome. I mean, Billy, again, no one is claiming that he's an Einstein. Certainly the brains in the family went to Jimmy. I mean, Billy wasn't stupid. He was a good businessman, and he had a great sense of humor. And you know me, I'm not shy about telling a joke, or I never take myself too seriously. And Billy definitely. If anybody never took himself too seriously, Billy would get the prize for that even more than I do. But I was reading about the Billy beer, which came out during the presidency. I was trying to find a snippet of an ad for Billy beer because I remember watching him on TV, but I could not find anything. I know that the Billy beer bottles have sold for hundreds or thousands of dollars. They are quite a collector's item. The Billy beer wasn't out very long, and it also wasn't considered to be very good. And interestingly enough, Ron, I'm not sure if you saw this. Billy, again, he did enjoy beer. I mean, I enjoy a beer or two, but not quite to that extent. He drank Pabst Blue Ribbon, which Pabst Blue Ribbon is probably one of the worst beers out there. A lot of bars in Columbus and around here, they'll sell it as like a junk beer night, a dollar for a 12-ounce or a 16-ounce just to get rid of it, because it really is, really bad. And so if Billy Beer was worse than Pabst, it had to have been pretty poor. I guess what I was reading yesterday was that when the makers of the beer, they were a brewery, I think, in Pennsylvania, which was looking to get back into the beer business and have a good marketing idea, they gave Billy about 6 different samples of beer and had him pick which one he liked the best, and this is the one that he picked. So if he liked the Billy beer the best, you can imagine how bad the one was that he didn't like. So,
thank goodness he was not the president, huh?
Yeah, I mean, the idea was good, but it was kind of a marketing flop, but it's certainly something that you don't expect to see a presidential family member do. Maybe the closest, and again, this really isn't a good analogy, is Donald Trump has his own line of clothing. I know there are shirts that say Donald Trump on them, but those were in existence before he became president, whereas the Billy Beer was capitalizing on the lovable, good old Southern boy image of Billy. And it flopped, but I think Billy does live in infamy as a character and a folk hero to some people.
He definitely is a character. It's like a moment of humor, but also of embarrassment.
But again, his brother Jimmy, as we've talked about, is one of the best former presidents ever, still very visible in his 90s, still helping out Habitat for Humanity. And as we say, Ron, Jimmy was not perfect, and he had a difficult presidency during a difficult time. But if you were to take qualities of maybe a half a dozen presidents, Reagan, for example, with a great sense of humor, you would give him probably that nod among all recent presidents. Carter for ethics and being just a regular guy. I mean, no one else I think even comes close. And as we look at the current administration, that I think increases in value. Would you agree with that?
Yes. And I must say that I used to joke in class that we have no perfect president, but if we could have someone with the good looks of John F. Kennedy, the domestic accomplishments of Lyndon Johnson, the foreign policy expertise of Richard Nixon, the honesty and ethics of Jimmy Carter, and the charm and humor of Ronald Reagan, we'd have quite a president.
I would certainly agree. How about the economy, which I think flourished under President Clinton? I mean, he's a recent president in my lifetime. Where does he stand among those presidents with the greatest qualities?
Bill Clinton you're talking about now?
Yes, because when he was president...
Well, Bill Clinton is rated number 13 among the presidents in the C-SPAN survey. He is rated quite a bit higher than Carter. So he's not in the top 10, but he's in the top third, I guess you could say, of our presidents. And I think he probably deserves to be there, but I wouldn't put him higher than that. I don't think he'll ever reach the top 10, because I think he had a lot of issues, not just his personal life, but I think that in many ways he did not accomplish a lot of what he might have planned to do. I think, looking back, I think he was more charm than accomplishment in many ways. I've always had a mixed feeling about Bill Clinton in office, and I do believe that Hillary Clinton would have been a better president had she been able to be sworn in. I do think she had greater ability and capability and could have accomplished more, but that's, of course, not going to happen.
But I think we'd agree also that Clinton came in a better time for the country. Carter came in during a very difficult time, inflation, the energy crisis.
Absolutely. Clinton had better times, and the economy was flourishing, but, of course, there were many ethical issues around him. And Carter, you know, came in at a time after Nixon and Ford, and you know, he said he would never tell a lie, and honestly, he did very little lying. But then, of course, some people said a president must lie in order to be successful. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think his administration was a very difficult period when we did not trust the presidency, and the presidency itself declined after Nixon under Ford and Carter, and then started to revive in its image under Reagan.
And so, ironically, Carter being very honest, and I agree, I don't think he really lied very much at all. That might have been his downfall. It's interesting.
It might have been. People joke that you can't be that honest. It's a terrible thing to say. Well, certainly the incumbent we have now, there's no issue there of his being honest. He doesn't know what it is to be honest or truthful. So we've gone really in, you know, worse than Nixon in that regard.
Of course, George Washington did cut down his father's cherry tree, I believe, and said that he did it. So
well,
he said he couldn't tell a lie.
That he said he cannot tell a lie. So we went from a president, jokingly, that could not tell a lie to a president who could not tell the truth. That's what people say
it would,
now.
It would seem we've come full circle, wouldn't it? But that's kind of how life is. Adam Lepp here with Mid-Morning Coffee Break. 48 minutes after 10 in the a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 12 before 11. On the phone with Dr. Ronald Fineman, our resident political commentator and presidential and historical expert. Ron, you are the author of the blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. And this morning you wrote that of the 44 presidents of the United States, and again it's 44 because Grover Cleveland served two non-consecutive terms, 16 of these presidents have had retirements lasting 15 years or more. Now, with birthday boy Jimmy Carter, now 93 years old, his retirement will surpass, let me just read what you said because it is actually a little bit complicated. I don't want to mess it up. Jimmy Carter and George Bush, number one, George H.W. Bush, have beat the longevity of Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan. Bush will surpass
Will, actually. Not yet on the dates coming up that I indicated. Right. They will pass Ford, Reagan and Ford. Yes, soon.
Bush will surpass it, actually, Wednesday of next week.
Pass Reagan, and then November 25th passed Ford. And then in the case of Carter, who's 111 days younger than Bush, he will meet on January 30th for Reagan and March 16th for Ford. So after March 16th, both will have outlived both of the presidents who now leave as far as total lifespan. Yes.
We're going to have a quiz on that next hour, by the way. But certainly the president with the most years in retirement is
37 as of January 20th coming up. Yeah, that's amazing.
Right.
You know?
I remember when President Ford died. It was about 11 years ago, I believe.
Yes, and he was almost 30, third longest. And yeah. Herbert Hoover was 31 plus.
And President Carter, again, 37 years out of office on January 20th of 2018. I still remember watching on TV, and again, I just started college. The hostages were being released, and President Reagan was taking the oath of office. Just a really incredible day in history that those two major events taking place essentially simultaneously. I'm sure you were watching TV at the time, Ron. What was going through your mind when you were watching the events of that day?
Well, I was glad the hostages were freed. I was not happy about the evidence that shows that the Reagan, team worked with Iran to delay the release of the hostages so that Carter could not get credit. And I do write about that in my article on History News Network that came out on Sunday about how basically it was dirty tricks that were played, just as with Nixon encouraging South Vietnam in 1968 not to agree to peace talks, which might have helped Hubert Humphrey running against him as Johnson was leaving. So, I mean, there's been dirty tricks done, unfortunately, in a number of these elections by Republicans when they won. And I point that out in that article that came out on History News Network.
I mean, I remember hearing about how Reagan was purposely trying to delay it, and certainly that would help his image. But the victims, the hostages themselves, they probably weren't too pleased about that. What do you think was Reagan's involvement in terms of delaying the hostages being released?
I don't think it's him personally, but I think people around him in his campaign. I mean, it's not that the candidate does it all by himself, but it's the people around him who obviously, with his cooperation, work to undermine and get involved. So in a way, we could say South Vietnam in 68 was manipulated by Nixon and Iran in 1980-81, and now Russia with Trump. So we have three Republican presidents all benefited by intervention or involvement with foreign powers to have an effect on the election.
One interesting thing from this blog article, Ron, something I was looking at, I think it was kind of intriguing. There have been three presidents that have had approximately just under 20 years in retirement, and you probably would agree here, these are three very different presidents, very different men. We have Millard Fillmore, besides having one of the most unique names of any president, probably the most, I would say, one of the top three most obscure presidents, and probably not one of our best presidents either. Harry Truman.
You're correct.
One thing he was known for was having a middle initial of S, because his two grandfathers apparently couldn't decide upon what the middle name should be, so it's just S, no period. Truman, again, probably could have, was considered in retrospect a pretty decent president, not as great as Lincoln, but certainly he's up there. And of course,
absolutely, Truman I think is underrated even now by many.
And
yes.
Of course, the popular, infamous Tricky Dickey, who again was considered one of our greatest presidents until Watergate, and then it kind of went downhill. So three very different. Is that intriguing to you, Ron, or am I being a little too analytical here? Three very different presidents at about 20 years: Fillmore, Truman, and Nixon. Any think about that?
I hadn't thought about it the way you're saying it, but you know, there's always different ways to look at presidents, and that sounds like another article I could write.
but you would agree, though, in looking at that milestone, those are three, I guess, divergent personalities, divergent presidencies, which may not mean anything, but it just kind of tickled my brain cells when I saw that. I said, how could they totally be different? I think a lot of people haven't even heard of Millard Fillmore. They say, who's that? Was he a president?
Fillmore, they may not, but I assume, although I've heard there are people in some classrooms, you know, they never heard of Truman because he's 75 years ago or whatever. It's pretty sad, but I remember even at times talking about Jimmy Carter, and I have some, not so much now, some students say, who's that? Because if they're born after him or even around the time he's born, they don't know about him until they're older when he's already out of office. So lack of history knowledge is unbelievable. There's so many people ignorant of their own history of the country, and that is very sad, and that's something all teachers and professors and authors and writers have to work against.
But it's good that they're taking your class because they can learn about that.
True. No, absolutely. You know, I certainly know I do make people have a better understanding of their history, and a lot of times people will come back after a class or write me or whatever. And in fact, I got to say, today I'm going to be meeting a former student from 9 years ago who lives elsewhere but is coming to, or is in South Florida, and she bought my Assassinations, Threats to the American Presidency book, and she wants me to sign it. So at 12 o'clock, I'm going to meet her for lunch.
Well, get your pen ready. I'm sure that will be a good...
Yes. Yes. So it's very nice. I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's been 9 years. I couldn't believe how
maybe
long
a
ago,
little,
but it's a long time, you know.
As
and
I
in fact,
said...
I should say that I met a former student from 1984 when I taught in New York in Los Angeles in June when I was going on a vacation. I was at the Chinese American Museum in Los Angeles, and I walked in, and I start talking to the person who was the supervisor there, and he looks at me, and I look at him, and he says, you're from New York, right? And I laugh, of course, can't you tell? And then we start talking, and it ends up, he told me I had you in 1984. You know, so it's quite amazing. 33 years later, crossing the continent, I meet a student I had in New York in 1984.
It's a small world, as they say.
Yes.
I was also thinking, Ron,
and now we're friends on Facebook, by the way, yeah.
I was also thinking, you mentioned even current young people around 20 years old may not be familiar with President Carter, but don't you remember when he was running for office? Didn't, like, Time magazine say Jimmy Who on one of their covers, saying, who is
this? Absolutely. There was even a book published about him called Jimmy Who, a paperback book. I have it, in fact. Yeah, because, I mean, he had been on What's My Line, I think it was, or To Tell the Truth, one of those shows, as a guest when he was governor of Georgia, and nobody knew who he was, and he was the governor of Georgia. The thing that stood out about him is his big smile, and they always portrayed him with a big smile, and I used to watch him smile and speak and say, how do you smile so broadly and still able to speak? And I've tried to do it, have a broad smile and talk to the mirror, and I can't do it.
Yeah, how's that for irony? To tell the truth, they're talking about him being one of the most honest presidents. Life, I tell you, it really, really can be quite ironic, to say the least. About 3.5 minutes left to the show. This is a show that we call Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, starring yours truly, Adam. Adam the Computer Guy, Adam at WWGH1071.com. I have many monikers and identities that I go by here at the station, but that just kind of adds to the fun. Wanted to talk a little bit about the musical legend that we lost yesterday, Ron. Kind of surprising, only 66 and a half years old. Currently playing one of his most well-known songs. And Ron, as I told you, this, I think, is one of Donald Trump's least favorite classic rock songs. It's actually one of my favorite songs from a really good album called Damn the Torpedoes that came out about 37 years ago. Refugee by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. I guess, Ron, like me, you like a lot of different kinds of music. Any thoughts about Tom Petty? Do you agree with me that his guitar playing was quite revolutionary and I think influences musicians?
I have no doubt that he was revolutionary and that he was brilliant, and 66 is much too young. It's just... But, you know, it shows that some people have a situation where they have heart troubles and they're not aware of it and they die suddenly. Other people have warnings of heart trouble and it saves their lives. And since we have a moment, I wanted to say that when I was actually 59 years old, I had what I thought was just indigestion, and it was checked into, and it was actually a blockage, four blockages. I had a quadruple bypass 13 and a half years ago. And thank goodness they said if I had not gone to the doctor to ask about it, I would have probably dropped dead within a month. And so here I am 13 and a half years later, and luckily alive and doing well and very appreciative. But I think it's a shame that some people don't know they have heart issues and they just die suddenly.
I'm glad you're okay, Ron. I did not know that, but I'm glad you're
doing
well.
I never mentioned it again. In June 04, I had sudden heart surgery, and I remember saying, "Hey, wait a minute, God, you can't take me now. It's too soon. Sorry." I woke up.
And I think the radio business, too, with that being your calling several years later, was part of the equation. So definitely, if you think you may have a heart issue, again, cut down on the cholesterol, watch your weight, exercise, and see a doctor. It might save your life. No question about that.
Yeah, there's too many cases of people that are not aware, you know, and it's really sad, you know.
About 1 minute left to the show, but would you agree, Ron, that Refugee is probably President Trump's least favorite Tom Petty song?
I would tend to think, he may not even be aware of it for all you know. He's a lot of things he doesn't know about, but he doesn't have much sympathy for refugees. No, he does not.
Well, let's hope that he...
really wrong, I think, but
right.
It's the way it is.
Let's hope, lyrics and song titles aside, that President Trump and his family do appreciate the brilliance of Tom Petty, losing him yesterday at a young age, way too soon, and I think his legacy of guitar playing, songwriting, and singing will live on. Unique voice, and as I said, he played in Columbus earlier this year, a very popular concert, and rest in peace, Tom. Ron, thanks for being on the show once again. We certainly appreciate it. Talk to you again soon. Have a great day there in southeastern Florida.
Thank you again for inviting me. I really had a good time. Thanks.
Be back afternoon with Now, Without Scott Spears, hosted by yours truly. Coming up in about 15 minutes, the lovely Linda Sims. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP 107.1.